Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to Color Your Life Happy for Monday, June 4th, 2012. I'm your host, Flora Brown, coming to you from Anaheim, California. In a moment, we will begin today's episode, The Celebration of Life Through Dance, with my guest, dancer and choreographer Stephanie Batten Bland. Today's show is being brought to you by abookin90days.com, a customized coaching program for heart-based coaches, entrepreneurs, and speakers who want to write a book to attract more clients and increase profits. You can get your copy of the 7-Step Roadmap to Publishing Success at abookin90days.com. I'd like to welcome all of you, my listeners, for making time to join me today to get an announcement and a reminder in your email of each episode. All you need to do is go to my show page, blogtalkradio.com/Flora Brown, and under my picture you will see a little follow button. Just click it, and each week you will get notified of the upcoming shows. If you're my friend on Facebook, you will also get notified each week, whether you like it or not. And there are many other ways through social media, of course, to keep in touch, and you'll see them there on the show page. Now, on this radio show, Color Your Life Happy, we talk about ways to create the lasting happiness you deserve in all areas of your life. To get at that goal, each week I interview guests from many different fields, such as self-help, spiritual journeys, relationships. Sometimes we talk about parenting, wealth creation. We've talked about business success, career, publishing, you name it. All of those things which contribute to lasting happiness. Today's show was pre-recorded, and it is my pleasure to bring to you now my interview with Stephanie Batten Bland. This is today's episode, The Celebration of Life Through Dance, with my guest, Stephanie Batten Bland, dancer and choreographer. Daughter of jazz musician and composer Edward Bland and writer Mary Batten, Stephanie grew up in Soho before moving to California with her parents, where she graduated from the Los Angeles County High School for the Arts. In New York City, she studied dance at the Joffrey Ballet School and the Alvin Ailey American Dance Center. She attended the State University of New York Purchase on a dance scholarship and the New School for Social Research on a scholarship for postcolonial literature studies. In 1998, she joined the Bill T. Jones Arne Zane Dance Company, where she spent several seasons as a soloist. Additionally, Stephanie has danced for choreographers, directors, and companies including Sean Curran, Craig Patterson, Gus Solomons Jr., Douglas Dunn, Lar Lebovich, dance, and many more. In 2005 and 6, she and a group of dancers performed as part of Joyce Soho Presents, a series created to encourage young choreographic talent. In 2008, Stephanie established her contemporary dance company, Company Stephanie Batten Bland, short CSBB, comprised of a group of French and American artists, each contributing creatively to the goals of the troupe that have performed live and via Stephanie's dance cinema films throughout Europe, Asia, Africa, and the States, most recently in the Ringling International Arts Festival in Sarasota, Florida. Stephanie was invited to perform at UNESCO in Paris for International Dance Day 2010. She frequently worked for So You Think You Can Dance, Poland, and choreographed for galas and commercial enterprises such as Louis Vuitton, MS, Guerlain, and Van Cleef & Arpels. She is currently guest choreographer for Frontier Danceland of Singapore. It is my pleasure to welcome to the show today Stephanie. Hi, Stephanie.
Hi.
Thank you so much for joining me. This is really an exciting topic because dance is such part and part of our lives, and I know that your company has a very special mission. So, but first I want to start with, when did your love of dance begin? Can you even remember when you didn't love dance?
I'm a pretty late starter. I think I was always really interested in expressing myself and finding ways to do that. But I don't think I really got the dance bug until I was about 13 or 14.
Mm, okay. And I read somewhere that you used to entertain your parents and friends and charge them.
Oh, yeah.
How did that evolve?
I mean, really, really, really start that entrepreneurial spirit a little
That's
early,
right?
I used to love, I really don't know how that began because I was so little, but I do remember, I definitely remember the Pointer Sisters being on. And my lip-syncing abilities, which were beyond reproach, apparently. And I know my little power puff self with my little puffy hair was, like, running around all the time. And after dinner, it was showtime. I mean, you know, if Soul Train wasn't on or Dance Fever wasn't on, I would be on.
Well, my kids used to entertain us, but they didn't think about charging us, so you were
really
ahead of
your time. Yeah, I think it was like 25 cents or something like that. Well, you know, it's an artist working family, so, you know.
That's right. You were smart right from the beginning with that. That was great. Well, what were the key turning points in your career that led you to become a choreographer and now owner of a dance company? I know that you've had many experiences, but which ones were kind of the key points along the way?
I think something crucial that happened is that I left the States in 02 and went to work for Pina Bausch in Germany and started a European career abroad. And that led to a lot of new encounters, and one of the encounters happened to be a bunch of girlfriends that were from the east of Europe and didn't have the same kinds of dance education that we have in the West regarding improvisation and being able to spontaneously create on the spot, which is how a lot of choreographers do their research. And so I told some of my girls, you know, like, listen, get a studio together and I'll help us all out and give us some workshopping ideas. And we ended up getting into the studio, and I ended up being a horrible friend. I didn't help them at all. I ended up making a piece. And didn't really realize that that was what was happening until one of them suggested submitting the material to a type of festival that also had, how do we call these things, panels that judge and a competition, basically. And we ended up winning first prize. And I said, well, this is funny. It's definitely not something I ever thought I'd be interested in doing, but it seems like it was wonderful. It was wonderful to do. It was wonderful to be a part of. And it kind of just started something. But I was still dancing, and I was in France by that time working on the head choreographer for the Josephine Baker show out of the Paris Opera Comique. And that obliged me to enter into a lot of different genres at once, from swing dancing to, you know, to samba to contemporary and to jazz, and it was just really wonderful to have to be in charge of such a large team and deal with so many different personalities. And the director there, he decided to give me the opera house one night and to have my own show. So I was like, oh, well, okay, well, I'll you know, let's try this whole thing again. And by this time I was probably 30, and so most of my friends, like me, we were all kind of pretty big beasts by this time, and doing a lot of guesting, and, you know, which is normal for the 30-year-old because you start to really get into your game around then. And I called up all my friends and I said, hey, let's put a show, let's put something together. And we rehearsed for about 2 weeks and we put on a wonderful show, and it got bought. It went to a Biennale in Martinique, and it went around and in Paris and then other venues, and it was just another seed that got planted. And so
wow.
I think those two things really started it. And then, again, you know, I happened to be home, and I dropped off a dossier just for the heck of it at the Joyce Theater. And they have a smaller venue called Joyce Soho, which is where I grew up, and it's down the street. And I was chosen to participate in their trampoline-type series. So these sort of like little things started getting planted, and I continued to perform and enjoy my things that I was doing performance-wise. But something was starting, even though it was the last thing that had interested me. I was very happy, and I loved slipping into other people's skins and diving into other works and bringing what I could to help bring their message across. But it turned out that actually I had quite a lot to say, could go on about it for hours in the studio. And so it just kind of happened like this. Life is full of such wonderful accidents, and this was another one of them, you know. And I'd say things started, let's say the recession allowed younger and, well, not necessarily younger, but smaller groups to be taken more seriously because of how the difference between cost for large groups versus the smaller group, and we started getting calls for work.
Wow.
And then these things start to happen. You start making choices. Okay, well, listen, if this is really going to start taking off, let's see how we can nurture it the best way. And then I met Mr. Baryshnikov after knowing him when I was much younger, and he offered me this fellowship between the Baryshnikov Art Center and the Jerome Robbins Foundation, and that sort of just sealed the deal. I mean, you don't really say no to the king.
Nope.
And now it's been amazing. I just finished a piece on Alvin Ailey's second company, and that's touring, and that's been an enormous pleasure, and now we're in our own season at Baryshnikov Art Center, and it's just been a really amazing ride, one I never expected, and I'm so happy that I'm on.
Well, I am too, and I congratulate you. It is fantastic. I read from an article that Mr. Baryshnikov said that he's really drawn to your flamboyance. And I want to read a quote. He said she's very showy, but full of excitement and love for what she's doing, and brings a little of that European sensibility about theatricality. And he says she likes to do a piece about something, not that it's necessarily narrative. And so what does it feel like to have the blessings of the king, as you call him? That's
it is really unreal, and it's been extremely overwhelming. It's been wonderful. I really don't know what else to say. I mean, I think he's a person that's so generous and has given so much to the community, and I only hope I'm capable of doing a fraction of that myself. You know, I think he's very aware of how much he changes and touches people. And through his generosity and of his building and the center that he's created, I mean, they're really allowing artists that don't have homes to have them. And I know when I'm in front of him, I have really no idea what to say sometimes. And it's quite comical.
I mean,
it's quite comical. But it is really wonderful because he really does allow a great freedom in. He doesn't impose rules on what we're making. He literally just wants to make sure that it's honoring whatever the fellowship is, or, you know, in this case, it's with the Jerome Robbins Foundation. So he really it was very clear that we needed to make sure that we were honoring a written craft and not necessarily too much text and these kinds of things. You know. So it's a challenge. It's an amazing pressure and pleasure. Pleasure pressure, I guess. And the dancers, everyone just lights up when we work in these conditions, because this building is so intelligently made and formed, and it's to make bodies happy. And then when you have a happy body, you have happy people, happy employees, and everyone wants to make a product that is going to be consumed on a large level scale, and that's what he's able to allow us to do.
That's beautiful. I am so impressed with the mission of your company, because I read that you are committed to cultural bridge building. Would you explain what that means for society, how dance contributes to that cultural bridge building?
Well, I mean, it's funny that we even have to talk about it, because it just seems like it's such a natural thing. I mean, we've only been nomadic people, since the beginning of time?
Yes.
know?
Yes.
But we are just so clever in boxing ourselves into definitions, and I think I'm just really interested in taking the lid off the box rather than keeping it on securely. And I think dance is a magnificent way of doing that, for sure, because the physicality can't lie. You can't hide behind gesture. You can communicate with a body that is readable in every country, in every place, and it's a very time-sensitive art form, which life is also very time-sensitive, and so I think it's something that touches you in the now, and these are things that we don't necessarily appreciate that often, but the body can allow us to appreciate it. So I think when we're capable of sharing sensation physically, it gives us a moment to stop, and in that moment of stopping is great appreciation for life. And I think that's really what dance is capable of doing. I think it allows us to celebrate our vitality. It allows us to celebrate and really kind of discover or dialogue our interconnectedness and our interdependence on others. And that's something that doesn't require words.
Right.
So, yes, I mean, I think if we do geographically, it's something that started in Europe and now I'm back home, so it's something that I insist on doing, on keeping a team intact that is on two sides of the pond, as most multi-million dollar companies do, actually. I just happen to have chosen a funny craft that doesn't make that many zeros. But, you know, that the business plan is the same, we'd say.
Yeah, it's still powerful, and what you've done, what dance does, as you were pointing out, is it actually reconnects us and helps us rediscover what we always have been historically, and we, like you say, we've gotten busy boxing ourselves and
we're brilliant at it.
Oh, yeah, we're so good at it.
And
forget that we are so alike, and we are interdependent. We need each other, and we forget that sometimes. Where can listeners learn more about your work so that they can follow you and perhaps catch your performances sometimes?
Everything is always online.
Okay.
Everything, the calendar is updated, you know, weekly as to where we're going to be and what we're going, where we're going. It's great now that ALEE 2 is performing The Legacy of Inheritance, because that's another way that my work can be seen, and you get to also see, you know, amazing other dances through them, but it's they tour much more than I do.
Is your website going to have all of the links to the other things you're doing?
It sure does. It sure does. Yeah, ALEE's
so
on
us
there.
Your website.
Singapore. So it's my nickname. I've refused to get a very dry name, so I've kept my nickname, and it's sort of the joke within the company. It's birdlegs.net. So it's very simple. And, plural.
Easy to remember.
And everything's on there, and it links to all the other companies that I do work for, because that's also a great way of working today, you know, besides just doing things on television and on film and and publicity. We also get to work on other companies that keep sharing simultaneously as your own troupe what you're doing, and that's very helpful.
Perfect. Birdlegs.net. That's perfect.
Yeah.
Now, I know you've received some great support, but there's still much work ahead for your dance company. What are the big tasks that you are going to have to put in place over the next 2 years?
I think there are a lot of logistical things that now need to get into place in terms of our management and having representation. As of right now, you know, I'm my cheapest employee, because I can be my assistant, travel agent, manager, you know. And what often happens in the small business environment is that after a while these things aren't done well.
That's right.
You know, I mean, really, I should be in the studio. Yeah, right. I should really be in the studio and not worried about, you know, who's going to JFK today to pick up, you know, whoever. So I think putting in that type of infrastructure, and it's already beginning. There's three people that I already delegate quite and rely heavily on, are wonderful. We have an advisory board that's put into place, and now we're going through the learning process of the American granting system, and that's beginning. But I think really just kind of continuing. I mean, I'm not interested in the short splash. Excuse me. I believe in the long haul, and let it be a little at a time, and let it last as long as it can, and as long as it's supposed to.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Now, tell us about your Place of Sun. Is that the current thing that you're doing? The one with the sponsor?
It is.
Tell us about that piece.
Well, Sun is just amazing. I'm really thrilled about this. This is about a 35-40 minute piece, and it involves creating an object into an environment. Benjamin Heller is an extraordinary artist with whom I've been collaborating on this for over a year and a half, and we've come up with this idea to render people comfortable and uncomfortable at the same time, and it allows us to adapt to situations. And to be able to adapt on stage to a situation with an unknown entity is a huge risk to take, because it requires a lot of trust in yourself, because you're also at the same time performing, but it also allows the person, the observer, to feel and go through the exact same sensations that you're going through. Mm-hmm. So we have a space that is normally, I'd say, you know, flat in the sense that you watch a performance. This space is actually becomes three-dimensional, and you enter into a space. Mm-hmm. And this has just been thrilling. It was inspired by, you know, it was inspired by the BP oil spill for me in 10, you know, down in the bayous. And I was really quite curious as to how animals are constantly capable of adapting to such horrific environments, and then it just sort of spiraling off, and animals, human beings as well, all living things, really. I mean, we either are going to adapt or we're not, and yeah, one's going to survive and one isn't. I mean, it's just kind of, you know, there's a Mary Batten in me. You know,
I mean,
you really get the, I mean, it's really kind of simple in the end, you know. I mean, it's either we figure things out and we create solutions or we don't. Mind you, I find that animals don't really have the choice of why they're obliged to adapt, yet we do, because
yes,
so many of our isms we create ourselves.
Yes.
Again, brilliantly, the box comes back, you know.
Yes.
And so how we take the lid off, or do we decide not to, because honestly it's kind of scary when you open that lid on sometimes, these kinds of questions are sort of dialogued in this piece. And it's exciting as can be, because to see something come to life after a year and a half of working on it is really emotionally overwhelming. It's just been a lot of, you know, it's been a lot of sweat that's gone into this, and ideas and time, and it's very rewarding. And Mr. Vershnikov understood the idea, and he said, "Okay, well, clever girl, go for it." You know, I was like, "Okay, then let's try and make this thing happen." So it's got six dancers and six eggs that can at times be seen as eggs, truly. Little individual globes. Sometimes they look like baskets. Sometimes they look like cages. It really goes through a lot of different visuals. And they're sometimes not always comfortable. And they're sometimes not always understandable. But I don't think life necessarily is either at times. So all the better that we can kind of go through these experiences live.
That's beautiful. I love the way that you have taken inspiration from what's going on in our society and then found a way to put it with dance, but also it gives us a message, even when we don't realize the message, I think, when we're watching dance. We can feel it, as you said. We can feel that discomfort in that egg-shaped cage. And I think that comes across, and it's beautiful because you don't need language. You have the bodies, the dance, the music. That's just wonderful.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for doing this. I want to thank you for speaking with me today. I know that my listeners are going to be empowered. And I want to let them know again, I've been speaking with Stephanie Batten Bland, and we've been talking about the celebration of life through dance. Thank you, Stephanie, for making time to be with me. I know you have to get back to rehearsals and something wonderful for us.
Yes.
Thank you so very much, and you have a wonderful rest of the day, will you?
Thank you very much. Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you. Bye now.
Bye.
Now, I've been interviewing Stephanie Batten Bland. I hope you enjoyed that interview. We had to do it from her theater rehearsal, but it was wonderful nevertheless. We have come to the end of today's show, and I urge all of you to tune in next week. I'll be back with another exciting interview next Monday, June 11, 2012, at 11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. This show was brought to you today by abookin90days.com, a customized coaching program for heart-based coaches, entrepreneurs, and speakers who want to write a book to attract more clients and increase profits. You can get your copy of the 7-Step Roadmap to Publishing Success now available at abookin90days.com. I urge you to share this show with your friends, family. It's so easy to do that. Just come back to the show page, blogtalkradio.com/Flora Brown, where you can listen to not only today's episode, but any of the episodes that have been run in the past 4 years since we've been on the air. I'm going to ask you to have a blessed week, to remember to color your life happy. And again, this is Flora Brown coming to you from Anaheim, California. Look forward to seeing you next week. Goodbye now.
Color your life happy.
Color.
Every day you can choose. If you choose happy, there's no way you can lose.
Color your life.